Just a show of hands, how many of you have seen this logo? Show of hands. Wow, not actually as many as I thought. Unless you're just being shy, that might be the case too. This was actually a big movement. I would have been in high school, coming into college. The I Am Second movement. I had to turn around and make sure it was up there because I was like, well, no, maybe nobody knows what I'm talking about. This was a big movement, and really the meaning behind that statement is the Lord is first, Jesus Christ is first, and I'm second. A few years ago, it was either my freshman or sophomore year of college, I went and decided I was going to buy a devotional book. I really like devotional books. It helps me stay kind of on a track. I'm a real structured guy, and I like to have something that I can open up and read every morning that kind of guides my Bible study. And so I went and I actually found one of these I'm Second books. Now, let me go ahead and throw this disclaimer out there. They are wrong in a lot of areas. There are a lot of things within these books that are not scripturally sound, but there are a lot of things within the books that are, and there are a lot of things within the book, these books and this way of thinking that I think that we can apply to our lives too. So I go and I buy this book, and I start, you know, I start at the beginning, and the way that this book, the certain book I have is set up is, at the beginning of each week, there's a video you go watch, and the video is kind of a testimony of a celebrity, somebody who was big in the spotlight and something, and they were living an awful lifestyle. Drugs, which is kind of going to play into the guy I'm going to talk about tonight, alcohol, pornography, all kinds of things that these people get wrapped up in, and they sit on this couch with a spotlight on them. And they just talk about how they decided to make themselves second and the Lord first. Now, obviously, their salvation stories, none of them are accurate, you know, scripturally accurate. But what they came out of and the mindset that they have is a mindset that I think we can all have too. So I'm going through this devotional book every week, and then, you know, and it was cool. Like I would watch the videos and I'd be like, okay, well, some of this stuff, you know, some of this stuff is kind of out there, but some of it is really true. Some of it is really cool. And then I came across this guy. None of you in this auditorium probably have any idea who this guy is, because I didn't. I'd never heard of him. This guy's name is Christian Hosoi. Just to tell you about his story, Christian Hosoi was a teen skateboarding phenom in the 90s. And what he says in his story is by the age of 7, I mean, this guy was hitting all kinds of tricks that if I tried right now, I'd probably end up in ECM's ER. I mean, this guy was, he was talking about all these different tricks he'd do, and he said that there was a different trick to learn every week, and before long, he was like, hey, I'm pretty good at this. I'm pretty good at what I'm doing. And he gets in with this group, and these group of skaters, and they get sponsored, and he hits it big. He hits it big. At age 10, this guy is hitting it big. I mean, this guy is in all these different X Games things. He's got all these sponsorships. He's got all this money. A 10-year-old now has all this fame around him. And then I started getting into weed at age 10. By 12, he was on acid. By 13, he was on crack. He was hooked on crack cocaine. He said, you know, what he said was, I had access to everything. He said, I was the youngest guy in all the clubs. I had access to all the cars. You know, I had access to all the money. I had access to all the fame. I had access. He said, I was meeting all these celebrities that I had seen in movies, and it was the best. It was a blast, you know. He said, I had all the girls. I had everything. Everything that you could dream of having in this life, I've got it, age 14. And what he describes next is he started to feel a little upset. He started to feel a little depressed. And he said, my life was like a bucket full of holes. And I kept trying to fill the holes with different things. And that's where the weed crept in. That's where getting into cocaine crept in. And he said, every time that anything good would happen to me in my life, it would just spill out of those holes. He said, I went through this cycle over and over and over again until 1995. He said he finally found something that worked. meth. And he said, that was the one thing that I finally found that felt like it would plug up that hole. Felt like it would plug up the holes in my bucket. Felt like it made everything okay. This is the happiness. This is the high that I've been searching for. This is the feeling that I've been looking for my whole life. I finally found it. Everything's great now. 5 years pass, and he describes it as it would be this feeling of intense, where he was at the top of the world, and then within seconds, crashed. And he said that the way that he described it was going around the mountain, going around the mountain, going around the mountain. And that's the way that he says it in his video. He would say, going around the mountain, one more party. Going around the mountain, one more injection. Going around the mountain. He said he would eat meth. He said, I would, any way you could get meth in my body, I was going to get it in my body. Going around the mountain. And his point was, I went around the mountain day after day after day, but I never decided to take the climb and get out of this. And he said, you know, he hit a point where he said, you know what, I'm going to shock the world. I'm going to get sober. And then he goes back into it again, around the mountain. One more time. One more time. One more party. One more hit of meth. One more. One more. Tomorrow I'll fix this. Tomorrow I'll get up and I'll change my life. Tomorrow I'll get up and shock the world. Around the mountain. Going around the mountain. One more time. Tomorrow. That went on for 5 years. And he said it all ended, and it all came to a crashing halt in 2000. So from 1995 to 2000, he said, I did crystal meth in some shape, form, or fashion every single day. He said he's getting off an airplane to go to one of his next events, one of his next, you know, skating events. He says he gets down off the airplane and, you know, all his fans are surrounding him and he's walking down the middle of this crowd. He said there's a big crowd of police officers. And they're sitting at the end of it. He said, I'm looking to the left, you know, I'm looking everywhere. I'm trying to figure out, you know, where I can run. So there was nowhere to go. And he walks up and the police officer looks at him and says, Mr. Hosoi, we believe that you have narcotics. We believe that you have been distributing narcotics. We believe that you have been involved in crystal methamphetamine for years. And he said, at that moment, I knew it was over. So needless to say, he's arrested. I think this whole story takes place in the Los Angeles area. And so he's in San Bernardino, I think that's what he said. And so he ends up in prison. He said it was amazing. He said I would walk in and all these guys that were younger than him would be like, yo, it's Christian Hosoi. Like, what's up, man? Like that kind of thing. And he was like, you know, and he would be like, oh, hey, y'all. He'd be like, what were you in here for? Murder was the first thing he heard out of a guy's mouth. Child molestation, all these different things. And he said that I literally hit the floor and started crying and asked myself, what am I doing here? I don't belong here. And he's locked into this cell, and he's sitting there for day after day. And they finally, after they had gotten all the process done and everything, they let him call his girlfriend at the time. So he calls his girlfriend. And throughout all this, he said I was an atheist. He said I had, you know, no belief in God, no spirituality at all in my life. And he says that he calls his girlfriend and he's like, you know, he's crying. He's like, I got to get out of here. I need a lawyer. I need bail money. And she said, no, you don't. She said, you need God. She said, Christian, go by or don't. The way that she put it was get somebody, I think call somebody or I can get it for you. Get you a Bible. Somehow get one. He said he started laughing. He said, a Bible? He said, no, I need bail money. I need a lawyer. He said he started yelling at her. I don't, a Bible? He said, I'm not dying. That's the way he put it. I'm just in jail. I just need out of here. And she said, Christian, I'm telling you, go get a Bible. So he was able to get somebody to retrieve a Bible for him. And he said that he opens up the Bible and he starts in Genesis, and he said, and the way he describes it in the video is, man, this was like some Star Trek or something. He said, I got in here looking around, he's like, I have no idea what that is. So he picks the Bible and he flips all the way over to Revelations. He says, man, this is even worse. So he said, I don't know what's going on here. Flips over, and it's funny how he says it in the video. He said, then I turned over to some book called Psalms. He said, Psalms? He's like, I don't know. That's a weird name for a book. Proverbs. He said, what's going on? And he said, then he flips over a little bit back, and he says, Kings. Now, he said, that's something I can get behind. That's cool. He said, I think I can relate to this. And he said he started in 1 Kings, and he just started reading. And then he got to one passage. And if you will, pull out your Bibles and turn to 1 Kings chapter 2. 1 Kings chapter 2, and we're going to be reading through verses 1 through 3. Now, keep in mind, everything that's happened up to this point has had no really belief in God, has never had that. His girlfriend tells him to go get the Bible, and this guy doesn't even know, you know, the books of the Bible. I mean, he's calling Psalms Psalms. I mean, this guy has no clue. And he opens up to this passage, and he said he's reading it. Now, the days of David drew near that he should die, and he charged Solomon, his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man, and keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn. I don't know why that verse impacted him so much. You know, different verses impact different people in different ways. But he said at that moment, he said, I read that last part. And he said, I put my Bible down, and he said, I just began sobbing. This is what I've been missing my whole life. I have been missing God. I have been missing the Lord and his statutes and his testimonies. And he said, that was what could fill up the holes. And he said, he just starts piecing these things together. That is what I needed. That's what I was looking for this whole time. I was looking for God's love. Because his point was, you know, my whole life I was looking for success in all the wrong places. All the wrong places. And he said, then I read that and it just hit me. If I'm going to have success in my life, I have to have that. And he said, you know, it was like scales fell from his eyes. That's how he felt. And he said everything just seemed to make sense. And, you know, and then he goes on to talk about his, you know, quote-unquote salvation experience. And that was not accurate, but the way that he describes his life after that, the way his mindset changed, was he said, I got up, and he said all the inmates noticed a noticeable difference within me, said that he was happy, said he was just had a great mood, said that he walked around, it was almost as if, you know, whenever the accounts where they were in jail and they started singing hymns and those sorts of things. He said, that's the way I was. In a jail cell, he said, I was so excited. I was so happy. And these guys were walking up to him and was like, Christian, you know, what's going on? And he said, I have found freedom in God. And they started laughing. They said, freedom? They said, Christian, you're in a prison. He said, you see those bars over there? This isn't freedom. You're locked up, man. And he said, I have freedom in Jesus Christ. And the statement he said it all was, I found freedom in a prison cell. Everything changed whenever he put Christ first. And at the end of all these videos, they always say, my name is Christian Hassoy, and I'm second. His life, quote unquote, changed when he said, you know what? The Lord is first, Jesus Christ is first, and I'm second. And Christian's life changed whenever he decided to live second. And that's what my sermon's about tonight. This is what this message is about. And I have two or three points that I want to connect from Christian's story that I think we can apply to our lives. And I encourage you that if you're somebody who you're not living second, you're somebody who the Lord really isn't first. Now, you might say he is, but you're not living like it. If you're one of these type of people, and if anybody's sitting here tonight listening to this, this is a lesson that each and every one of us can take from this building, and we can truly live second. And I promise you, and this is what Christian said in his video, when you decide that you are going to live second, and you realize who's first, everything else just flows, and that's where you find true joy. So the first thing The only way to live a fulfilling life is through Jesus Christ. Anything else is just a bucket full of holes. You know, I said in the story, Christian said that my life was like a bucket full of holes. Every day I was trying to find something. I was trying to find that high. I was trying to find that pleasure. And he had access to everything, you know. That's what he said. He said, I had access to anything and everything that you could think that could give somebody joy on this earth. I had access to all of it. He said, but every day I would fill the bucket up and it would drain out. And by the end of every single day, he said, I realized I had nothing. The only way to live a fulfilling life and to fill up those holes is with Jesus Christ. Romans chapter 5 verses 1 through 2 says, therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we also we have access by faith into this grace in which we stand and rejoice in hope of the glory of God. Now, I'm telling you what, if I'm a person and I don't have God and I don't have this, I've seen that firsthand in my family over this past week. When you don't have that, you start turning to other things. When you don't have that, you start turning to the bottle. When you don't have that, you start turning to anything and everything to find that next high, to find that next income of happiness. And at the end of that, what do you really have? The next day, we have peace. We have access to grace. We have a reason to rejoice in hope through Jesus Christ. You can search your whole entire life trying to find things. And maybe you do feel this way tonight. Maybe you are that type of person that you've been in this rut and you've been saying to yourself, man, I'm just not happy here lately. And maybe you do feel like your life is a bucket full of holes. And you have not found anything to fill that up yet. And maybe you're somebody that you're saying to yourself, well, you know, I feel like I'm living my life the right way. This passage right here tells us that if you truly are serving the Lord the way that you need to be, and you are truly making the Lord first in your life, and you live that way, you have access to these things and you have a reason to rejoice in hope. Another passage is from John chapter 10, verses 7 through 10. It says, then Jesus said to them again, most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters out and find pasture, if anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to have and to destroy. Now this is the part I want you to focus on. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. The part that I have underlined right there applies perfectly to this. Christian Hosoi lived a life that he was always trying to fill the void. And I think this is addressing that. Jesus came to this earth so that we may have life. And not only that we may have a life, not only that we have hope of a life after this, but that we might have a life more abundantly. That we may have a life that we can live in abundance. A life that we can live rejoicing. A life that is more than just going through the motions. A life that has a purpose. That is what a life with Jesus Christ is to each and every one of us. The second point to learn from Christian's story is give the Lord and His Son 100%. How many of you have ever felt like you have given everything you've got to someone or something, some assignment in a relationship, in a marriage, anything? You felt like you gave everything you've got and you come out empty. And you come out and you feel like you were cheated a little bit and you didn't get everything out of that you felt like you should have because I gave my all and they didn't give it in return. How do you think the Lord feels when we live that way with Him? Because I promise you, God's end is held up. God and His Son gave everything for you. Everything. They gave 100%. I promise you that. You never have to question that. But I'm here to tell you that there have been times where I've given 75%. There have been times where I've given 50%. There's been times where I've given 0% to the Lord. How do you think that makes the Lord feel? I want you to think about situations in your life, like I said earlier, where you felt like you gave 100%. And had nothing to show for it. And think about how that made you feel. Felt betrayed a little bit. Felt, you know, I really felt like it should have been justified, right? Justice. I should have. If I gave my all to this, I should get all in return. Not only do we come up just short of God's glory often, we come up way short. And that was what Christian said throughout his story. Is I realized at that moment whenever I read that passage in Kings that this success that I thought I had been achieving, it was nothing. And I realized that I had not been giving, he said, you know, I hadn't been giving anything to God. When he realized that, and he realized what the Lord had done for him, that's whenever his life started to change. And there's a couple verses I want to look at in regards to this. Romans chapter 12, verse 1, a verse where a lot of us are familiar with. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Also, Colossians chapter 3, verse 17. And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Living sacrifices and giving it all. That's a theme that we see throughout Scripture. Why should we be in a situation where we can only give a little bit when the Lord gave it all? We're, you know, something that growing up that I would always say about certain things, well, that isn't fair. That isn't fair. I did this and I did that and I didn't get what I... That isn't fair. Do you think it's fair that if you live a life where you are not a living sacrifice, that's fair to God? Do you think that if you live a life where every day you aren't striving to give your all to Him, do you think that's fair? I encourage you tonight that if you are not giving 100%, you need to start doing that. Because there's a poster in the college classroom back there that catches my attention very often whenever I look at it. And it is so true. And it's so simple, but it's so true. And it's got a man dressed about in a suit like me, and he's holding on to one chain link that says the world and one chain link that says the church. And it says, the most miserable man in the world. That is 120% true. If you're giving even 10% to the world and you're trying to hold on a little bit, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. The Lord requires our all. The Lord requires 100%. And until you give Him that 100%, you're never going to have that true happiness and that true joy that is found within being within Jesus Christ. Because He requires your all. So why not give it to Him? The last point. The time to start living second is now. Put emphasis on the now. Why? I have three verses that I want you to look at. James chapter 4, verse 14. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. In Revelation chapter 22, several times, the Lord says, I am coming quickly. In 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10, the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. What's the theme of all these verses? I'm coming quick, your life will end fast, and you better be ready. If you are at a point in your life, and I know that this affects younger people, probably more than older people, because I've been there. Where you say to yourself, oh, I'm 18. I got the whole world in front of me. I got my whole life to make things right. This is something that I've been guilty of, but this is also something that I'm very passionate about talking to people about. That is not a lifestyle you want to live. I'm just telling you. Oh, well, you know, these first couple years while I'm in college, I'm going to go have some fun. I know that sounds like such a cliche thing to say, but I'm going to go have some fun. I'm going to dabble around in some parties and some alcohol. I'm going to get into some stuff a little bit. I'm going to be places I probably shouldn't be, thinking that I might not get into anything. Eventually you do, and eventually you look back and you say to yourself, well, I've been doing this for a couple years more. And then a couple years more, and then 5 years more, and then 10 years more, and then you look up and you're 60, and you look back and your whole life has gone down the drain because you have decided as a young person that I'm going to do what I want and I'll fix it later. Are there some people who live that lifestyle that later on they do fix things and they do live a life for the Lord and become some of the most righteous and pure people you'll ever meet in your life? Yeah, oh yeah, I know a few. But how many of them do you know that are either so far gone that you don't even know where they are, or they're not on this earth anymore? That's a dangerous game to play, to where you live for yourself and you live for, whenever I live for Carson, and I do what Carson wants to do, and God can take a little bit of time in the back seat right now, that's fine. Because you know what? I'm young. I can fix it later. Going around the mountain. One more time. Tomorrow. These are three of the most dangerous statements that you could ever tell yourself. Going around the mountain. Going around the mountain. Every day. Every day I wake up, I'm going to do it right today. Today's the day. Today's the day I'm going to start the climb. Today's the day that whatever sin I'm wrapped up in, I'm coming out of it. Today's the day I'm wrapped up in a relationship that I don't need to be in because there's things going on that are driving me away from God. Today's the day I'm coming out of it. Today's the day that I might be working in a job that is causing me to fall away from the Lord. Today's the day I'm going to take a stand for that. I'm going to climb the mountain. Today's the day I go up the mountain. And every day, you look back and you say, going around the mountain, going around the mountain. And no, your situation might not be as intense as Christian's, where he was taking a hit of meth every day. But it doesn't take getting hooked on meth to drive you away from the Lord. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. If you got something you're dealing with and you're at the bottom of the mountain, going around the mountain doesn't do any good. Eventually what's going to happen is if you go around the mountain and around the mountain and around the mountain, you're going to dig a rut, you're going to dig a hole, and you're going to look up, and you're going to be so far down, you're going to ask yourself, what am I doing here? How do I get out? Got to be careful with these things. One more time. One more time. I'm going to indulge in this sin one more time. I'm going to go to this party one more time. I'm going to go drink with my buddies one more time. I'm going to go commit sexual immorality one more time. One more time. One more time. And then you look up and it's been 20,000 times. And your life is behind you. One more time can be the last time. And one more day can be the last day, which is why this statement is the scariest of them all. Tomorrow. There's a song we sing, and in it it says, tomorrow's sun may never rise. That is true. And I'm telling you, that is also another one of these cliche things that we hear. Well, you don't know. You don't know if there'll be another day. You don't know if there'll be a tomorrow. That is so true. And I know we get tired of hearing it, but that is so true. I know especially to young people it doesn't seem that way. Tomorrow, I'm going to make my life right. Like Christian said in his story, tomorrow is whenever I'm going to sober up. Tomorrow, I'm going to change. Tomorrow, I'm going to start. Why? What good does that do? Waiting another day? Waiting another month? Waiting another year? And waiting another lifetime? That's what that turns into. I have seen it with my own eyes. I have seen it in family members. I have seen it in friends from high school. Good people at one point in their life, really good, I'm talking New Testament Christian people, they look up 30 years later and they're either dead or they're getting there. All because, one more time, just one more time. Oh, I'll fix this when I'm, you know, whenever I get out of college, I'll fix this lifestyle. Tomorrow. These are some of the most dangerous statements you'll ever tell yourself. I'll just go around the mountain one more time. I'll partake in this sin one more time. Tomorrow I'll fix everything. Tomorrow's the day. You're not granted another second. You're not granted another minute, an hour, a year. Those verses that we read a second ago, your life is like a vapor. It really is. It's there and it's gone. The Lord is coming quickly. And yeah, relatively, we don't know what that means. But if it's there, you better pay attention to it. And he's going to come as a thief in the night. We're not going to see it coming. There are not many people on this earth who are able to say, I know the exact moment whenever my death is going to, whenever the time on my life ends. There aren't many people who are able to say that. There are so many people who woke up today thinking that tomorrow I'll make things right. Tomorrow I'll make the change. And so many of those people are probably no longer here. I'm not just saying this to get you to make some lifestyle change to save your physical life. I hope you understand that this is all about your spiritual life. This is about your relationship with the Lord. Never get into the habit of saying these things. Never get into the habit of living that way, because you're going to look up and your life's going to be gone, and you're going to ask yourself, like Christian did while he was sitting in the floor of that prison cell, what am I doing here? Forget about tomorrow. Why not tonight? If you are someone who has not become a Christian, if you have not been baptized for the remission of your sins, why? Tomorrow? Tomorrow? Tomorrow I'll do that. The next service. Tomorrow night. Couple weeks from now. The story that I told you the last time I preached about my professor, he said that's exactly what got him. Whenever he was 14 or 15, 16, oh, the next time, tomorrow I'll make that decision. And, 20 years later, at age 34, that was finally whenever he became a Christian. And he said, I went a lot deeper and a lot farther away from the Lord in that amount of time than I ever thought I'd be. If you need to do that tonight, do that tonight. If you're someone who has, you are a Christian, you've fallen away, you've started living this lifestyle where, oh, well, I can go out and I can do whatever I want and I'll fix it later. I hope these three statements are burned into your mind whenever you're living that way. Going around the mountain one more time tomorrow. If you need to change tonight, change. If you need to make a change within your life spiritually, do that tonight. And I encourage every single one of you to live for Jesus, live for His kingdom, and live second. If there's anything that we can do for you tonight spiritually, we ask that you will please come as we stand and as we sing.